Okay, good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Speed Talk session number 10, estimation and calibration. We are competing with lunch. Anyway, thank you very much for coming. And my name is Krzysztof Jajuga. I'm chairing the session. I'm the member of Methodological Committee of Statistics Poland. The rules here are there will be no discussion. I will encourage you to discuss after, of course, during lunchtime. And there are 8 presentations, 4 minutes for the presentation. There will be no red card, but I'll just put clock, and there will be buzz after 4 minutes. So you are supposed to finish after 4 minutes. Sorry for this, but these rules were given by organizers. So let's start, and so we are going in this order. So Volodymyr Saroglio from Ptucha Institute for Demography and Social Studies, effects of the influence of calibration procedures on reliability of indicators estimated by the State Household Sample Service in Ukraine. So, Volodymyr, floor is yours.
Thank you. Good afternoon, dear colleagues. The kind of non-response rate, especially among the well-to-do population strata in the state household income and living conditions surveys, may lead to biased estimates of many indicators, in particular indicators of income expenditures, income inequality, and so on. As we can see, these indicators for Ukraine, for instance, published in the Human Development Report, are significantly lower than in neighboring countries. I should say that for geographical neighbor country, the same. And the inequality adjusted index is much higher. This is not very realistic in opinion of many Ukrainian international experts and can reduce the credibility of these statistics. The effects of undercoverage of the well-to-do strata by surveys are studied now by specialists of State Statistics Service of Ukraine and scientists. The level of non-responses in household surveys in Ukraine, as in many other countries, is generally increasing, especially in large cities. At the same time, additional sources of data are becoming more accessible for official statistics, and their quality is generally improving. Last 2 years, the procedure for adjusting the reliability of the household living conditions survey results is tested to better take into account living conditions of the well-to-do strata. One approach for this is to calibrate the sample weights using the tax register data on the percentile distribution of taxpayers' income and the data from the national account system on the household disposable income by regions of Ukraine. In parallel, calibration of the sample weights is carried out using as auxiliary information population and household numbers by strata, regions, and area type, and age, sex, structure of population. Thus, a fairly complex calibrating procedure is implemented. One of the known advantage of using calibration method is that they allow using in analysis the full survey data set. The disadvantage is that the sample weight system is sometimes corrected very significantly, and the calibrated weights can be significantly different from the design weights. This can lead to a decrease of the effective sample size and accordingly to decrease of the accuracy of estimates. At the same time, such procedure allow reducing the bias of estimates and thus to increase the reliability of indicator estimates. In this slide are shown the changes of weight quality characteristics after first stage calibration using demography data on number of household and population, and after calibration, experimental calibration using this tax office data and national account system data. We can see the changes of characteristics, of quality characteristics of weight. the reliability, one
just, more. Just one sentence.
Okay. We can see that the changes in reliability is much higher than the changes in the estimates. So if published coefficient of variation is in the national level of monthly total expenditures is about 1%, but taking into account the bias, it increases 15 times. So I only wanted to say that we develop some approach to improve this this in our surveys to account this bias and that the influence on the reliability is much higher than on the estimates.
Okay, thank you very much for your presentation. I think you're welcome to later on to ask questions. I ask now Annalisa Lucarelli from Italian National Institute of Statistics. Topic is a reweighting method to adjust for enterprise changes, the Italian quarterly job vacancy rate and hours worked estimates.
Good morning to everyone. The Italian quarterly job vacancy rate and hours worked estimate are produced by means two direct business survey sources, but also an administrative base source is used for the editing and imputation and also for the calibration constraint computation. The sample of the survey is drawn from the Italian Statistical Business Register, which is updated 2 years before the reference period of the survey's data, so that two different reference periods between the source used for the sampling design and the source used for the computation of the calibration population has been there exist. As a consequence of this time lag between the source used in the sampling design and in the calibration estimation phase, an enterprise can be classified differently according to the two sources if its stratification information has changed over time, stratification information such as economic activity and size class. This implies that the original correspondence between a design stratum and the calibration domains may be broken, and an increase in the weight, the final weights variability within calibration domains is observed. Table 1 shows the original correspondence between sampling strata and calibration domain. Calibration domains are obtained by aggregating one or more strata, and each single stratum belongs to a single calibration domain. Table 2 shows as some enterprises classified on the basis of the Italian Statistical Business Register in the sampling stratum H1 belongs to the calibration domain H1 but also to the calibration domain H2 on the basis of the information derived from the source used for calibration constraints during the estimation phase, due to the fact that the source used for the calibration constraints is more updated than the source used for the sampling design. In this example, we also see the higher weights variability in the calibration domain H2. To ensure a more homogeneous distribution of the final weights within calibration domains, a new reweighting procedure has been applied so that the sign weights have been recalculated, updating the sample unit classification by means of the information derived from the source used for the calibration domains during the estimation phase. As a consequence, the correspondence between strata and calibration domain is maintained. In this table, we can see the variability, the final distribution of the final weights in the case in which no correction is made and in the case of the new when the new reweighting procedures has been applied. Our conclusion, the new reweighting procedures take into account change in the enterprise stratification value between the sampling and the estimation phase. By means of the new reweighting procedures, a lower variability of final weights, but also a greater or similar accuracy of the estimates of the target variable has been obtained. Thank you for your attention.
Okay, thank you, Annalisa. As you see, I'm very democratic because I'm still giving one sentence as a conclusion. Well, Carlos Fulera Carrera from Instituto Nacional de Estadística. Calibration as a tool to enhance accuracy and coherence in tourism statistics.
Well, so good afternoon, everybody. So I'm going to talk about the paper we have developed in INE, calibration as a tool to enhance accuracy and coherence in tourism statistics. So while I work in the Residence Travel Survey, this is a household survey that I try to estimate trips made by residents in Spain and the overnight stays and expenditure associated to these trips. And also attending to its characteristics as origin, destination, length, purpose, etc. So we perform two monthly calibration, two types of calibration monthly. This is calibration to sociodemographic variables and calibration to hotel occupants survey estimates. So the calibration to the hotel occupancy survey. So this is a survey also performed by the INE. And this survey estimates trips and overnight stay at hotels based on establishment information. So as you can see, this survey has a better accuracy in the for this specific estimates. So as you can see in the table in the coefficients operation. So the calibration to the HOS has mainly two goals, the accuracy improvement and the increased coherence between both surveys, avoiding send contradictory messages to the user. So the characteristics of the calibration to the HOS is that is a monthly calibration. We need to make a pre-adjustment to overcome methodological difference between both surveys. And we calibrate to five regions. They are the regions with more sample. They are Madrid, Canary Island, Andalusia, Catalonia, and Valencian Community. And one group with all the other regions together. The reason to do this is because if we calibrate individually the regions with less sample, we can have problems in the convergence of the algorithm, the calibration algorithm, and also we can get very high rising factors. So that is the reason to do this. So this is some of the results to the calibration to the HOS. So in the green line, you can see the residence travel survey estimates just calibrated to the sociodemographic variables. The red line will be the HOS estimates, and the blue line will be the RST estimates calibrated to the sociodemographic variables and the HOS estimates. So as you can see, we get better coherence between both surveys, and especially focus on those months with higher seasonality, as you can see in the summer months or in Easter months. So, attending to one of the regions not calibrated individually, it means in the biggest group, you can see that this current is not rich. So we have been made an study about an extended calibration that is a quarterly calibration for those regions calibrated individually in the monthly process. This is our result of this extended calibration. So as you can see, the blue line will be the RTS monthly calibrated, and the red line will be the HOS estimates, and the green line is the RTS quarterly calibrated. So as you can see, we reach the coherence between both surveys with this calibration. So this extended calibration is not included yet in the regular process of the survey. These results invite us to include, but we have to make more analysis in order to check if the inclusion of this process could cause a break in the series, making impossible the comparison with previous years. So that's all. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much. So I ask Rita Luz from University of Western Cape. Prediction error estimation of the survey weighted least squares model under complex sampling.
Good afternoon, everybody. Many large-scale surveys make use of complex sampling designs in order to gather the information that's required for analysis. It is important that this design be incorporated when any modeling is done with this data. The linear model is ubiquitous in applied statistics to model a numerical response based on a set of predictors. One of the objectives when we develop a model is to be able to obtain a model with good predictive capability. The prediction error has long been used to assess the predictive capability of a model. Cross-validation is one of the methods that is used to create artificial data sets by splitting the data into training and test sets, fitting the model to the training set, and then using the test set responses to be predicted by the fitted model in order to obtain the prediction error of the model. Although cross-validation is well known under simple random sampling, it is not necessarily the case for use in the survey-weighted least squares modeling area. So the objectives of this research is to adapt the cross-validation techniques to be used to estimate the prediction error of the survey-weighted least squares model. It is important to know into how many groups to split the data, so we also need to assess how many times the splitting needs to occur. And then a final point that was added to this research is to determine if we trim any outlier sampling weights, whether there is a further improvement in the prediction error of the model. Two new thresholds that I've developed are introduced here, the 1.5 IQR, which is a threshold that's based on Tukey's outlier detection rule, and then the last is the yield threshold, which is honed from extreme value theory. The data that I used in my simulation study is the income and expenditure survey carried out by Statistics South Africa, which is a survey used to assess income and expenditure, as well as poverty and inequality in the country. There were a number of adjustments made to this data set in order to obtain a clean surrogate population from which replicate samples were selected. 100 of these samples were selected following a similar design to the IAS, namely a stratified two-stage cluster design. The replicates were used in two ways. One way is to obtain an indication of the true prediction error of the model, and the second way is then to apply the cross-validation methods after they've been adapted. Various weights were compared in the results, ignoring the survey, which we know we should not do, just simply using the design weights and then introducing two integrated weighting methods, the exponential ranking ratio based on person auxiliary information, and then the same but using person and household auxiliary information. Also, we will be comparing results based on the trimmed as well as the untrimmed sampling weights, and the number of splits that were considered in this research is splitting twice, 5 times, 10 times, 15 times, 20 times, and then as many times as the observation units you have. Then we will be comparing the prediction errors that we obtain to the true prediction error, and we will use the measures, measures bias and mean square error to assess their performance. So in order to conclude, the cross-validation methods were then adapted, and they were applied to the primary sampling units, the clusters in each of the strata individually, in order to obtain the prediction error of the survey-weighted least squares model. What I found in the end was K-fold cross-validation. In this case, with complex sampling data, we should use at least 10 splits, because what I found is although your mean square error remains fairly stable for the estimates of the prediction error, the bias tends to increase after you use more than 10 splits. So between 10 and 15 splits in the end was the best. And then also what I found was it did work to trim the sampling weight so that the variability was lower. The method that worked best was applying the Hill threshold to the calibrated weights using person and household information. Thank you.
Thank you. That was just in time. Okay. So I ask next presenter, Johannes Gusenbauer from Statistics Austria, and the topic is the R package surveys, estimating standard errors in complex surveys with rotating panel design.
So, hello everyone. My name is Johannes Gusenbauer, and I would like to present this small R package that we developed at Statistics Austria and which we already use in our production. The main goal of this R package is to use it on servers with rotational panel design. And we use a bootstrap mechanism. Basically, we implemented this rescale bootstrap for stratified multi-stage sampling. We implemented this into our R package, and we also use this improvement of accuracy. So there is an option to get an improved accuracy in the package, where we simply applied from the paper from Vijay Verma, where you average bootstraps over multiple waves, and this can actually lead to a reduction in variance. So we tried to make this R package to implement all these aspects and to make it very easy for even R beginners. So the people that should use it in our office, they are mostly from SAS, or they are beginners in R, so they should also be enabled to use this package. And basically, there are three main functionalities here. We have the first function where you draw the boost replicates, the second one where you recalibrate them, and at the last stage, you just want to have your estimates. So just get a quick look over the different functionalities. We have this function where you have lots of arguments, but most of them are optional anyways. So you have to plug in your sample data, and then you basically describe the sampling design. You can have stratified, you can have cluster as well, you can have combinations of those. So how complex your sampling design was is not the matter. You can just specify any sampling design you want, and the function will take care of this. If you do have household identifiers or personal identifiers over the waves, then this will also be taken care of, so that this replicates. They do incorporate this panel structure, so that it will be followed. Those people will be followed, and each of the replicates will have the same structure as your original sample, so to say. If you have done this with the drawn all the boost replicates, then you want to recalibrate them to some target values. So we basically use the IPU2 function from an already existing package because it's really efficient, so it's easy to calculate this. And you basically plug in your data and say, I want to calibrate on age and on gender and on region and so on and so forth. And after this, you get a lot of information that all the calibration was successful, hopefully. If not, it would tell you that it didn't work. And afterwards, this is like the core function of the whole package, where you just want to get your estimate. So this is called calculate standard error. And basically, what you can do is you specify with this var a variable that you want to deal with, and then you have a function that you want to apply on this variable. So you have like a weighted ratio, or you want to have totals, or you want to have whatsoever. And then you can specify, okay, I want to have this in different groups, I want to have this by age, I want to have this by gender, and I want to have it for all my panel years, I want to have it for differences in panel years, or I want to do this mean that I explained at the top, where a mean over these panel weights to have a reduction in my sampling variance. So there are a lot of arguments again. Most of them are, again, optional. So here's just the thing that I said. So you can, there are a lot of optional arguments here. You can also have quantized if you want to. And here's just an example. If you would apply this, then this is what comes out of it. So you have like a bit of an explanation to it where it says, what have you calculated, using what function, and let's skip to the end. It's available on GitHub, so it's freely available. You can check it out. And yeah, if you have any issues with it or you have any demands on the package itself, then you can just contact us on GitHub and we'll try to fix it or we'll try to improve on the package.
Thank you very much. Hey, thank you very much. Now I ask Thomas Glaser, Statistics Austria. Using administrative registers to improve sampling of EU SILC in Austria.
Okay, thank you for the introduction. I'm going to talk how about we use administrative registers to improve the sampling procedure for EU-SILC in Austria. This is a work where also the previous speaker, Johannes Kusenbauer, contributed. And I'm going to jump right into it. I'm guessing that most of you are familiar with the SILC survey. So it's the statistics on income and living conditions. And there are two things we have to keep in mind for the further slides. So the first thing is that we have this rotational panel design, as mentioned in a previous presentation, where we have for each new sample year, we have a freshly selected first wave sample. And then we have one rotation that is the second, the third, and the fourth year in our rotational sample, and these four subsamples comprise the whole cross-section. And the most important indicator based of EU-SILC is that risk of poverty or social exclusion rate. For the largest part, this indicator contains the risk of poverty rate, which is based on the household income distribution, more precisely on the equivalized income. So for EU-SILC, we started using administrative registers in the year 2012. This was made possible by a national regulation and a pseudonymized key, where we can match the income registers to our sample. We did a back calculation where we did a revision of the previous SILC years. So from now on, we have an unbroken time series from 2008 onwards. This is important for measuring Europe 2020 targets. Most of the income is now measured by registers. The remaining 13% are still surveyed by a questionnaire. And since we use this register data for also imputation and weighting, we ask ourselves, why not also use it for the sampling procedure? Because for our sampling frame, which is the central residence register, we also have this pseudonymized key, so we can also match this income register information. Until 2015, we didn't use it. We have a stratification based on province, not two region, where we have a disproportionate allocation. Within each province, we have like smaller regional subsets, interview units. But in 2016, we decided, okay, maybe we can make another substratification within the regional units based on our income-based data in the frame, and we decided to use the first quartile of the income only from registers aggregated at household level, kind of as a proxy for a risk of poverty rate. And then we did the first wave sampling procedure with these new substratification criteria. So what are the first results? Well, to sum it up, they are kind of inconclusive. So if I look at each of the survey years separately, so 2015, 16, and 17, I see that in 2016 and 17, where we have the new substratification, if I use in the variance estimation this new substratification, I have a clear reduction in the standard error. For the whole cross-section, this is not really visible because we have, as I've said before, four rotational subsamples. But if I look at the first wave samples separately, you can clearly see it. Another thing is, if I look at the development of the standard error, more precisely the coefficient of variation over time, we can see a reduction in the standard error in the first wave sample of 2016, not so much in 2017, so it's kind of a rebound to the same value of 2015. This has numerous reasons. The dispersion of weights is high in 2017. We have a different structure of non-response, measurement errors, higher interview burden, and so on. So to sum it up and to have a short outlook, together in collaboration with my colleagues from the methodology department, Johannes Kusenbauer and Alexander Kovarik, we improved the sampling procedure for the first wave of 2018, where we didn't use the first quartile of income as a substratification criteria, but they estimated the at-risk of poverty or social exclusion rate with a machine learning algorithm. So now we hope we have a better substratification criterion. And only in 2019, we will be able to have a full evaluation of this new stratification for the first wave samplers, because only then we have four rotational subsamples that used income as a stratification criterion in the first wave samplers.
Thank you very much. Raphael Beyer from Deutsche Bundesbank will talk about the Bundesbank's Research Data and Service Center, Gateway to Treasures of Microdata on the German Financial System.
Can you tell me your name?
Bayer.
Okay.
So here's a little commercial break in between. I have no estimators presenting here. My name is Rafael Bayer. I work at the Bundesbank, and we have just established a research data and service center for data users. I'm going to talk very quickly about who we are and what we're doing and what we're doing as well, and what we're offering as well as how we're offering it. So what we're doing is we have a lot of data sources in the Bundesbank. We are trying to link this microdata as good as possible using record linkage techniques we've heard of yesterday already. We also offer advisory service on data collection and data access. We provide data access and guaranteed data protections since we are an official data provider. We also document the data, meaning all methodological aspects of the data is being produced as well. And besides that, we do our own research. So we are right in the middle between the data producer and the data user. And for the data producer side, we also have a look on the international playing field, meaning we are engaged in EXTA. So if you have any questions for EXTA or as an NSI or especially as a central bank, if you want to work together on the topics of dissemination of your data, on the topic of metadata as well as an administrative data research facility, we have a nice group who talks about this already. So just ask us and be free to join us. For the user side of data, we have the following statistical units which we cover. On the one hand, well, we are a central bank, so we hopefully have good data on banks. But besides that, we also cover data or recover data from companies since they are obliged to report to us. We also have granular data on securities, and we have a small household survey on the financial situation of households. So these are the granular data sets which we offer, which we also have linked in our research data facility. Well, the households are not linkable since they don't have an identifier who is able to do that. How are we offering this data? We have offsite access through scientific use files. However, this is only for the household data file. And we offer on-site access on the one hand as a guest researcher in the Bundesbank, and on the other hand through remote execution, but only for the direct investments data. The nice part is those data are weekly anonymous, meaning we don't do any samples. We only extract the direct identifier, everything else is as it is reported by the reporting unit, and I hope I will see you in Frankfurt one day. We have nice offices in the 32nd floor, and if you have any further questions of our facility as well as the Nexa, just ask me in lunch or any time left. But since I'm German and I was born in Poland, I'm suffering twice these days, so be very kind. Thank you very much.
Thank you very much. I think we should not exaggerate the results of World Cup soccer. There are much more important things than this, so I would prefer losing in the World Cup and having GDP growth rate higher, definitely. In Poland, yeah. Okay, Daniel Rosh from Central Bureau of Statistics in Israel will talk about improving monthly estimates of job vacancy survey with statistical model.
Hello everyone, I want to present you a statistical model that we applied in our survey, job vacancy survey. It deals with a big variation and small sample size. The job vacancy survey is a monthly survey that we are conducting since 2009, business with 5 employees or more. The goals of the survey is estimating the number of vacancies and the rate of vacancies in various economic sectors. And much more important, it's a part of the leading indicator for monitoring and the important parameter in the rate decision, rate interest decision. So in order to reduce the response burden, it was determined that the firms that belong to the take some strata, the small and the medium firms, will be divided randomly during the quarter panel sample. The strata are determined by the number of employees. And sometimes these variables, they are not correlated. There is a large variation of the vacancies between firms and the same strata, which means that, for example, in the construction branch, you can take a strata of small business that was sampled in January, April, and July, and so on, and they will ask to recruit workers, while in the same strata in the construction branch, the units that was sampled in February and May and August save their staff and don't look for to recruit workers. So the problems that occurred from this, there are small, a great variation. We can see that in the total vacancies, the change from month to month. And if we look at the level in the construction branch, we can see first that if we take March and June and September, we can see that it's always a low level. We have a bias here. So we have three optional solutions. First is to not publish monthly estimates and to do moving average, but the central bank is ask us to publish monthly average because it's closely monitor the market of employment. And the other solution was to increase the sample and ask all the firms monthly, but since Israeli entrance to the OECD, we have a large number of business surveys and we don't want to increase the burden response. So we decided to apply a statistical model. It's a state-based model, and we saw that the error is in our RIMA 3 term. The model is with Markov chain according to Tiller, and the model is estimate the error sampling, and we are remove it. We can see that in the blue line, now it's the estimate of the total vacancies. We can see it's much more smoother. And if we look at the level of the vacancies, we can see that all this spurious variation disappeared in the model. In conclusion, the adoption of the model improved the estimators and the reliability without increasing the response burden. The statistical model that is based on Tiller might solve many problems in other business surveys with panel sample design. It's very important to analyze your survey and look if you have a spurious variation that comes from the sample design. Thank you.
Okay, thank you very much. That concludes our session. I would like to congratulate all the presenters. You know, I thought before this that how can you make it in 4 minutes? But you did this and you presented, you know, the most important part of your deep research. And that's, I think that's very important because as a scientist or data scientist, whoever it is, we need to communicate results to the public. Public don't want to listen for 30 minutes of lecture. They want to listen for 2 minutes or maybe, you know, if we are interviewed by media, they say 1.5 minutes, please, and don't use these words because they will not understand these words. So thank you very much again. Thank you. And I understand we deserve a lunch. Hopefully the lunch is still available. Thank you.